Good evening. Trump is back at the coronavirus briefings. Robert E. Lee's descendant says no statue at Antietam. And with other stories and these, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. So President Trump says he's been wrong all along. The coronavirus is not going away.
Unfortunately, get worse before it gets better. Something I don't like saying about things, but that's the way it is. It's the way, it's what we have. You look over the world, it's all over the world. And it tends to do that. The governors are working very, very hard. And we are supporting them 100%. Everything they need, they get. We have a relentless focus, and it's been that way from the beginning. But we've learned so much. As you know, in recent weeks, we've seen a concerning rise in the cases in many parts of our South. You look at South, Southwest, and West. This growth in cases first began to appear in mid-June, primarily among 18 to 35-year-olds, many of whom were asymptomatic. We're also facing the challenge of a significant spike in virus cases across the rest of the Western Hemisphere, including Mexico. Mexico's been hit very, very, very hard. As you know, the president, a great gentleman, was here 2 weeks ago, and they have really been hit hard. Because we've achieved a nearly fourfold increase in testing capacity in 2 months, we're successfully identifying more asymptomatic and mild cases, some cases so mild that you really don't even treat them, some cases with children where they don't even know that they're ill.
And Trump adds he doesn't know anything about Ghislaine Maxwell's alleged threat to name big names in a Jeffrey Epstein sex ring. Maxwell's been charged in connection with the case of the billionaire alleged to have trafficked young women for the rich and powerful.
Ghislaine Maxwell is in prison, and so a lot of people want to know if she's going to turn in powerful people. And I know you've talked in the past about Prince Andrew, and you've criticized Bill Clinton's behavior. I'm wondering, do you feel that she's going to turn in powerful men? How do you see that working out?
I don't know. I haven't really been following it too much. I just wish her well, frankly. I've met her numerous times over the years, especially since I lived in Palm Beach, and I guess they lived in Palm Beach. But I wish her well, whatever it is. I don't know the situation with Prince Andrew. Just don't know. Not aware of it.
And the Journal of the American Medical Association says the true number of coronavirus cases in the United States could be anywhere from 6 to 24 times higher than the confirmed number of cases. Relying on blood tests, the article says about 7% of residents of New York City have antibodies to the virus. In San Francisco, it's about 1%. Centers for Disease Control Director Robert Redfield has said the true number of cases are 10 times more than the reported cases of COVID-19. And President Trump signed a memorandum on Tuesday preventing migrants who are in the United States illegally from being counted when the U.S. congressional voting districts are next redrawn. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said in a statement the measure was unlawful and was designed to again inject fear and distrust into vulnerable and traditionally undercounted communities while sowing chaos with the census. Pundits say Trump's memorandum could prove popular with his base as he tries to generate enthusiasm for his reelection in November. And Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said Tuesday that a House Republican aggressively confronted her outside the U.S. Capitol on Monday, calling her an effing bitch. According to The Hill, Representative Ted Yoho, Republican of Florida, approached Ocasio-Cortez and told her she was disgusting for suggesting that unemployment and poverty were leading to a rise in crime in New York City. Ocasio tweeted, "I never spoke to Representative Yoho before. He decided to accost me on the steps of the nation's capital yesterday. Believe it or not, I usually get along fine with my GOP colleagues. We know how to check our legislative sparring at the committee door." A spokesperson for Yoho denied using the slur. And the Reverend Robert E. Lee IV, the great-great-great-grandnephew of Civil War General Robert E. Lee, told the House Natural Resources Subcommittee today it's time for Confederates to surrender to the Union again. The Methodist Reverend admits that he grew up with a Confederate flag on his bedroom wall and celebrated his namesake's place in history. Now Lee says the stars and bars that represent simply racist ideology.
"I fully believe, along with a host of other amazing citizens of this great country, that Black lives matter, and for us to continue to celebrate a man who questioned the education, disparaged the right to vote of black life, and had previously fought for the continued enslavement of Africans on the North American continent is an affront to those now who are suffering under current weights of oppression. That said, I want to uplift two people who ultimately shared that with me. One was Janie Bowman, my black nanny in the South in the 1990s, who sang the sweet hour of prayer while I slept in her arms when my parents worked. Though she's not on this earth today, I know in the hereafter she, along with countless others who experienced racism and bigotry and white supremacy, are cheering you all on to show that the cost of following what's right might not be politically expedient, but it is incredibly good. Likewise, my confirmation mentor, a strong woman of color named Bertha Hamilton, taught me that I could take my Confederate symbols down and still live to tell the tale. She implored me to remove a flag and a picture I had in my room because she saw my life, my calling, as more valuable than these symbols. I'm here today to say the same is true for all of you. If we are honest, the answer is clear. We cannot remain complicit with these monuments. We cannot remain silent anymore. If we do so, our silence becomes agreement and endorsement to complicity. The statue at Antietam and the bill that it represents and statues everywhere must be removed for a more perfect union, which is inclusive of a better tomorrow and a better United States. I will close by saying that as much as I love the history of my family and the study therein, I am most avidly an armchair presidential historian. Many presidents, from President Kennedy, President Reagan, and President Obama, have compared these United States to a shining city on a hill. While I acknowledge that all of these three presidents were incredible orators and public speakers, the notion of a city on a hill is a distinctly spiritual one, an area I hope, at least as a pastor, that I know well. In the Christian New Testament, Matthew's gospel states, "You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket." Friends, we are on a hill. I call on this committee and this Congress to pass this bill not because of erasing history, but on the fact that the American people have lit a light that is no longer hidden. Thank you.
The Reverend Robert E. Lee IV, the great-great-great-grandnephew of Civil War General Robert E. Lee. The committee was holding hearings about a bill called the Robert E. Lee Statue Removal Act. It would remove the monument to Robert E. Lee at Antietam National Battlefield in Maryland. And a Minnesota judge has lifted a gag order in the case against four ex-officers charged in the death of George Floyd. Hennepin County Judge Peter Cahill made the order after several attorneys in the case talked to the news media. A coalition of news organizations asked the judge to rescind the gag order on Friday. In more protest news, President Trump is planning to deploy federal agents to Chicago and possibly other cities run by Democrats. He's continuing his assertion of federal power and unprecedented use of the Department of Homeland Security in political ways. In a tweet Sunday, Trump blamed local leaders for violence in Chicago and other cities. "The radical left Democrats who totally control Biden will destroy our country as we know it. Unimaginably bad things could happen to America," Trump tweeted. Referring to his likely Democratic opponent, Joe Biden, Trump said, "Look at Portland, where the polls are just fine with 50 days of anarchy. We sent in help. Look at New York, Chicago, Philadelphia. No." In Portland last week, federal agents swooped out of black vans and dragged protesters away without warrants or probable cause.
"What are you doing? Use your words. What are you doing? Use your words. What are you doing? Use your words. What is going on? Who are you? NLG will get you out. What's your name? Tell us your name. Okay, you're fine. We'll get you out.
Bro, what?
All right. We got you, friend.
We got you. NLG.
You just violated their rights. You just violated their rights.
Thanks for keeping them f***ing...
In response, protests intensified. A fire was set in the entryway to a federal courthouse, but also became more creative. The Naked Athena of Portland, a woman without clothes, sat in the street during a protest. The federal agents quickly fled,
replaced by bemused city cops. A Navy veteran was beaten, as he said, like a punching bag, and gassed, the images displayed on national news. And a group of moms linked arms to protect protesters. The head of the Department of Homeland Security is Chad Wolf. He refused to apologize for the actions in Portland.
I offered DHS support to help them locally address the situation that's going on in Portland. And their only response was, please pack up and go home. And that's just not going to happen on my watch. So we need to make sure that we're supporting our law enforcement officers here and making sure that they're going to continue to protect the federal courthouse here. That's what the DHS does. That's our mission. We're not going to abdicate our mission, our responsibilities. However, whatever the local leadership here is telling us, we're going to do our job. We're going to do it professionally. But we're not going to have these violent anarchists who show up about the same time every night for a series of hours and having that federal destruction to property. I was able to tour the courthouse here. I saw the graffiti. I saw the broken windows, the broken doors. There's a facility right across the street from the courthouse that has 47 coats of paint on it. They have to paint the facility every night after it gets graffitied. So it's time that we take a stand. It's time that the local leaders here publicly condemn what the violent anarchists are doing. And only then, I think, will police, local police and federal police get this under control.
Chad Wolf is head of the Department of Homeland Security. In New York City, 2,500 protesters were arrested, including numerous people, for violating an 8 p.m. curfew. In some cases, NYPD, accompanied by FBI agents, pulled people out of jail for questioning. National Lawyers Guild attorney Martin Stolar is defending some of the folks arrested at protests in New York. He says what's happening in Portland is unusual.
People were arrested on curfew violations, were pulled out of line and questioned by the New York City Police Department Intelligence Division and by the FBI.
Right.
It wasn't that the FBI pulled them out and did it alone. They did it in conjunction with the NYPD.
Washington Post reported that protesters, a person who was walking away from a protest was dragged into an unmarked van by men in uniforms and then taken to a federal
court. Yes, I saw that. That's out in Portland, and that's really weird. I would like to know what happened and try to get to the bottom of who the hell's running around looking like they're vigilantes.
Yeah, is that something you've ever heard of? Is that something that in your career you've seen?
That's happened in my experience. Certainly not in New York City.
Is that a Trump thing, do you think?
I have no idea. I hope it's a weird thing. I hope it's an anomaly. I can't believe it's something that's some kind of a program. I mean, I'd hate to think that's frightening.
Meanwhile, Mayor Bill de Blasio says he will not ask prosecutors to drop charges against people arrested for curfew violations. Attorney Martin Stolar.
All of the public defenders in the city, together with the National Lawyers Guild, New York City chapter, wrote a letter to each of the district attorneys in New York demanding, essentially, that all of the protest-related charges be dropped, including the summons cases, which include most of the curfew arrests. We've had very much resistance to that indication. They're not dropping anything, so we're moving forward. With regard to the curfews, most of them were issued by summonses or desk appearance tickets that will not come to court until September or October. It's pretty outrageous that the mayor is going to enforce what is now a Class B misdemeanor violation, which is a criminal record, which any number of innocent people can have attached to their names and which has consequences for potentially the rest of their lives. It's pretty outrageous that that could happen, particularly, and we have several instances where people were on their stoops. People were arrested before the curfew. People were arrested doing essential things that they had to do. It's really absurd. He's doing a tremendous political disservice to the population of New York by insisting that people who were out after his imposed curfew, which had very little to do citywide with the looting that was going on in very limited places, and was enforced and in a racially discriminatory manner.
Stolar adds, the National Lawyers Guild is hosting Zoom meetings this Thursday and Friday for protesters and others arrested for curfew violations.
I just wanted you to know, and BAI and anybody else to know, that the Lawyers Guild in New York is having two large meetings for arrestees.
Mm-hmm.
where we're going to talk to them about their cases, you know, like a large Zoom webinar type meeting. It's going to be on July 23rd and July 26th. People who got arrested should go to nlgnyc.org/event calendar. nlgnyc.org/event calendar. And they will find that the event is there, and they should sign up to come to one of the meetings. They'll get a whatever package, and there's some materials that they'll get as well.
Martin Stoller is an attorney with the National Lawyers Guild representing protesters arrested after the killing of George Floyd. And while Mayor de Blasio has taken a hard line with protesters arrested last month, he's allowed a protest encampment near City Hall for several weeks. At a meeting of top cops, Commissioner Dermot Shea had harsh words for politicians who've been responding to the call to defund the police. NYPD Commissioner Dermot Shea. Court officials have denied that courts are closed and claim they're being used as scapegoats by the mayor and police commissioner for the spike in shootings this summer.
And Con Edison is requesting tens of thousands of Queens residents turn off their air conditioning to preserve energy. New York has had several days of 90 degrees temperature in a row, and the power grid is straining under the load in some localities. The utility sent out a notice to customers on Tuesday in Glendale, Forest Hills Gardens, and Middle Village, announcing that equipment problems would force them to reduce voltage by 8% in the area. As of 4 p.m., there were 92 outages affecting roughly 1,000 customers throughout the five boroughs. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo.
75 years ago this summer, the world entered the nuclear era. It began at a site in the remote deserts of New Mexico with the first atomic bomb, named the Gadget. It ended a few weeks later with the bombing of the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But while the public has all but forgotten the first nuclear bombs, even less known are the roots of the nuclear enterprise in the African nation of Congo, then a colony of Belgium. It so happened Congo, a poor nation rich in natural resources, possessed the most potent source of the element uranium, fuel for the atomic bomb. Over the weekend, a Zoom conference was held linking the Congolese people with indigenous people from New Mexico to mark the suffering of the first victims of the bomb. The mine where the uranium was ripped from the earth is known as Shinkolobwe in the region of Katanga. Eventually, the uranium made it to a series of processing plants across the United States, winding its way into the bomb plants in Tennessee and Washington before arriving in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Anti-nuclear activist Roger Peet.
From Oak Ridge and Hanford, the products of Shinkolobwe travel onward to Los Alamos National Labs in New Mexico, where they were used in the research and development of the first atomic weapons. The Oak Ridge uranium was used to create a bomb design called Little Boy, and the plutonium from Hanford became part of a bomb design called Fat Man. They built a sample bomb called the Gadget to test the Fat Man mechanism, and this first ever explosion of a nuclear weapon is now known as the Trinity Test. On July 16, 1945, at about 5:30 in the morning, the U.S. detonated this first atomic bomb in the desert near Alamogordo, New Mexico. Both bomb designs were then detonated over Japan several weeks later, killing hundreds of thousands of people.
Roger Pete is an anti-nuclear activist from Washington. In the Congo, miners were never told they were digging up something as dangerous as nearly pure uranium. They were paid little, and strikes were dealt with violently. Isaiah Mumbilo is with the group Congolese Civil Society of South Africa.
The designer of the Shinkolo were top secret, knew how dangerous the mineral was, and the not sharing of the information prevents the achievement of the project and completely destroy life. Let's see how the U.S. people was viewing uranium. The U.S. people, for them, it was the atomic bomb. It was equal to death. But in Congo side, it was just a dust to be taken away. That's the meaning they put in their brain for them to discover what was the top secret of the uranium. And it, for them, it was like the need of Western world. It's something so simple as that. So it was terrible in that time to have such a meaning where the uranium is going to destroy and to kill the whole entire generation, which we have the consequence up to now.
The scientists at Los Alamos took the plutonium, a synthetically produced element made from uranium at the Hanford site in Washington, and fashioned it into a bomb. The test, known as Trinity, was a success, but the local ranchers and indigenous people were told nothing of the dangers. An indigenous resident of the Santa Clara Pueblo is Beata Tsozi. She says the native people of New Mexico would never have given their permission to use the land to test the bomb if they had known about the top secret project.
To the networks now that we have in the Congo, this is also the first I am learning about Shinkolobwe. Yeah, I'm really just stunned and floored of the global connections that are being made now. And I think there was a lot of intention in keeping us separate from each other for so long. And now that we're reconnecting, there is so much that we can accomplish all together, working together, because the nuclear beast, as you call it appropriately, thrives on us being separate and divided from each other. And that is no longer the case. We are going to abolish nuclear weapons. We are going to abolish nuclear energy. We are going to evolve as human beings in this place, and I just know it in my heart after hearing all these connections being made.
Beata Tsozi of the Santa Clara Pueblo in New Mexico. Local residents and ranchers were exposed to the radioactive fallout from the Trinity test. Local people still inhale radioactive dust that contaminated the region. Radioactive particles are powerful carcinogens. A member of the Trinity Downwinders is Tina Cordova.
When they tested the bomb that day, they had no concern for human health. They had no concern for the people that lived as close as 12 miles to the test site. And literally, they didn't warn us before or afterwards. And we lived these incredibly organic lifestyles where everything that we ate and everything and the water that we drank was all negatively affected by the environmental invasion of the radiation that fell from the sky for days afterwards. And so July 16th isn't a day that we celebrate whatsoever, but we do memorialize all the people that we've lost. We reflect on the loss, the sacrifice. We reflect on all the people who were the unknowing, unwilling, uncompensated, innocent victims of the first atomic bomb. This isn't a day of celebration for us.
Tina Cordova is a member of the Trinity Downwinders. An activist, Tholuck Fuamba, adds forgetting about people who died because of colonialism absolves the consumers of the products from the part they play in exploiting the poor.
You all know about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but you never talk Shinkolobwe. It's because we are never reminded about the people that have died in the mines and the people that have died in the village. What is not known to the public is that the whole village was in fact wiped out right after they were done, you know, collecting the uranium. There was no program to remember them. So we, as the Congolese Civil Society, did our best to always host an event around this time of the year, of course, to not only remind people about Shinkolobwe, but remind them about the people, the human lives that were lost due to this massacre. On one end, we all think that the villain is probably sitting on a throne somewhere, but the villain is actually us that consume the products.
Congolese activist Thola Fuamba. The first shipments of uranium from the Congo were secretly moved to a Staten Island warehouse beneath the Bayonne Bridge, owned by the Archer Daniels Midland Company in 1939. 1,200 tons of the radioactive ore, stored in burlap sacks, were kept there for 2 years before the government discovered their worth. The spot under the bridge is still radioactive. The old warehouse was ripped down after the war. A recent report by the federal government says its remains may have been buried in Great Kills Park, closed due to elevated radioactivity several years ago. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is the great Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thank you.